8 hours and 95 degrees with dogs.
Yep. Yes.
Happy honeymoon, honey.
Yeah.
Long story short, like, very much operating out of fight or flight, very hard. And we're like, f*** it, let's sell everything and live nomadically.
If you're listening to this and you know where Rawlins, Wyoming is, you'll have a special appreciation for why this was so f***ing miserable.
Maybe Google it.
We slept in the Walmart parking lot. Kenzie would drop me off. Like, we were going in there to go to the bathroom and stuff. She would drop me off at work. And that's when a lot changed.
This was the first thing that actually worked that we did. You go,
yeah.
We kind of became paralyzed because there were so many emails to answer. There were so many orders unfulfilled. We were like,
it just got too big.
We can't do this. And then we ran out of money.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't go through. And we looked at each other and we said, we have to let everyone go.
Yeah.
In that moment.
So hard. Welcome to the BK Petcast. I'm Kelly, the founder of Green Juju, and today I'm going to be interviewing Bryce and Kenzie. So we met at Super Zoo, and really all I knew about you guys was that you had this viral TikTok video and are now these huge social media influencers.
And Super Zoo was only a month ago.
Yeah, Super Zoo was a month ago, yeah. Yes.
Which feels like a year ago now.
Right. But in the last few days, we've gotten to hang out a bunch. I've learned about your story, and I learned that not only are you social media influencers, but you guys have experience in manufacturing and retail and obviously social media. So they say that every overnight success is 10 years in the making, and I can't wait to hear about yours. So who are you today?
We have the BK Pets. We share as much information as we possibly can about how to enrich and extend your pet's life. Pretty selfishly, because we are terrified to lose our dogs.
That's how it started.
How it started. And so we figured we are like growing on this journey of learning all this information and taking it in, we're like, well, surely other people out there have to be equally as terrified and like just also generally like upset about the short lifespan of animals
and the current state of the pet industry in general, which those are obviously very directly linked.
Yeah.
You know. We are trying to take information that so many amazing experts and veterinarians and nutritionists around the world are studying and researching and all this stuff.
And have devoted their entire lives to.
Exactly.
Their multi-decade careers.
We want to take that information and turn it into something easy to digest and easy to adapt into the average pet parent's life. So our big goal is to take this information and say, okay, where are you at? What bits and pieces can you start implementing in your life that's manageable, accessible, affordable, all those things? So I think that's very much who we are today.
We have a podcast as well, clearly, yep, that we are on right now.
Our big shtick is short form content. That's kind of how we got started. And then we have our YouTube channel too.
Yep. And then a book coming out in December, yes, which I'm not sure when this is going to go live, but
yeah, hopefully sooner than that, but it could go out after. So yeah. The book will be linked for pre-order or actual order, depending on this when this goes out.
And I got a sneak peek at the book.
Yes.
I think you guys are going to want to order it.
Love that.
So would it be fair to say that you guys are a bit of the Cliff Notes for the pet industry?
I think that's a really good way to put it. At least this side of the pet industry
the natural sector.
Kind of. Honestly, as I say that, I think we really are kind of in a lot of it, because in, you know, in the standard pet industry, some of the things that we don't love, we want to share that with our audience. And we want to kind of inform them and empower them to not only make decisions on what's best for their animal, but to also be able to go to the store and choose the right products, or not the right products, but the right products for them, you know, based on their individual dog's needs and based on, you know, whether this product is healthy or beneficial or not. And so, yeah, I think that we're kind of the Cliff Notes for the entire pet industry, because we are very much on the natural side, but we're going to talk about everything.
Tell me about the tags.
Okay. There's some information we probably got to lay out before we get to the tags. You want to start us?
Yeah. Back to what you said about the 10 years in the making. So we've been together 6 years?
Almost seven, I think.
Almost 7 years. So the entire time we've been together, and we'll get into this, we have been pursuing social media. Before that, I had spent a year in the athletics department at University of Wyoming in their social media internship. So down on the field, basically my job was to create FOMO. That was kind of like...
Yeah, we talked about FOMO so much.
We talked about it a lot. And so I started the year before Bryce got there.
And it was football, basketball, wrestling, tennis, swimming. I mean, every sport imaginable. We were... We were the corral. That was what they called us. The social media team was called the corral.
Yeah. I got rookie of the year my first year. And then my second year, I got chosen to work directly with Instagram. I think they were trying to promote the like live streaming. So instead of having games on like television, it was live streamed.
Was it through Facebook?
I think.
Because obviously Facebook owns Instagram.
Yeah, yeah.
Social media, I mean, you know, social media for small businesses now is basically a requirement. Back then it was kind of just like some of the newer, younger businesses seem to be the only ones on social media for the most part.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of people like using personal accounts for business.
Yeah, totally.
Business.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There weren't even like the business accounts.
Way for
like,
those. Yeah.
I mean, when I was doing this with Instagram, it was right when Stories had first come out. And the year before, they were like, okay, Instagram Stories are going to come out. And I was like, that's so stupid.
Well,
like,
we were doing Snapchat at the time.
Yeah.
Snapchat had Stories.
Last year to me.
So yeah, I was like, no, we are not going to do Stories. Like, that's so stupid. And then when I was working with Instagram, you could only upload photos for Stories that had been taken in the last 24 hours. But I had spent the previous week, there's like, obviously tailgating is really huge in football culture. I think it's really special in Wyoming because there's only one university. And so pretty much everyone is hyped and they're traveling far to come to these games, like 6-7 hours. And so I had spent the previous week with Bryce getting to know one specific person that is pretty well known for their tailgating. And they also,
they're there like, every game year after year.
Yeah. They have like a slow cooker. I don't know.
It was all like barbecue.
Yeah. And he would like in off season of football go and compete. So the plan for the story was to just follow him through his journey of what game day is, including the prep. And that morning I tried to start uploading and I was like, I can't upload any of these because these were taken over 24 hours. Like that's how old. Yeah. That was stressful. So yeah. So this is probably my 8th or 9th year working in social media. So I think that quote you said does ring pretty true.
Yeah.
You want to share your experience of the internship at all?
Yeah. So I joined, it would have been Kinsey's 2nd year, was my very first year. And I had like bought a very fancy, not a very fancy, but like $1,000 camera. I was getting really into videography and stuff. And so video was kind of the thing I really wanted to do. And so, you know, we'd be down in the fields, like getting videos of the touchdowns and putting together hype videos. And Kinsey and I worked together a lot on the Instagram stories, but the first semester, she was with somebody else and we had just kind of like started to hang out and like kind of become close. And then we actually ended up dating in the spring semester. And so the whole 2nd year of my, like it would have been the 2nd year of my internship, the 3rd of yours, we got to spend together as a couple, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, and then what?
And then it was, so we were learning all these kind of unwritten rules of social media in somewhat, I mean, a professional setting, definitely like, we're the Wyoming Cowboys, but we couldn't use like any gun emoji, like just these little nuances, you know? And so we were like, what if we knew we wanted to work for ourselves. We knew we wanted to work together and we knew we wanted it to be in social media. So we're like, well, what if we created a blog to teach people how to utilize like social media for their businesses?
BASM, Bachelor's in Social Media was the title of the blog, which in hindsight was false advertising. Because you're not getting a bachelor's degree. But the thinking behind it was like, there wasn't a bachelor's degree for social media at the time. So this was kind of, you know, going to be that replacement, not an actual degree. But
yeah, so we did that for a little while.
Probably like 6 months, 8 months. So writing blog articles, I remember. So funny enough, this blog was my very first taste of virality, which was actually kind of crazy. So we had
written in the internship, we'd had videos that had gone kind of well.
Yeah, but that wasn't our own thing.
Yeah.
So like the kind of the first thing, we'd written an article that was like 8 social media trends to implement in 2023, which as I'm thinking about this right now.
2023?
Yeah, no, not that year. But like, remember when we were planning videos with Dane and we were like, okay, we need a list, like 8 things that we learned from this book. We literally did what we're trying to do now way back then. But anyway, Pinterest was the big thing for blogs. And like, it's still one of those platforms that people make a lot of money on and we just can't seem to crack, you know? But we had put out just a pin about this and it was like 8 things to implement in 2023. And the article was getting like thousands and thousands of views from the
I don't even remember this.
Yeah, this was like the very first thing, but I think that was one of the last articles we ever wrote because we were kind of on the way out at that time. And it just
felt really forced.
Yeah,
it was not like we were excited and we had all this information in us, but every time we tried to sit down to write a blog post, it was like way too hard.
Yeah.
It did not flow at all.
And I don't think we had enough experience to really be teaching businesses how to do social media. You know, we had just had a brief couple years in our internship. And so I think now we would obviously be much more equipped to teach people how to do social media. But back then it was the horse before the carriage. Is that how they say it?
The carriage before the horse.
Yeah. One of those.
I think the horse is supposed to go.
Oh, okay. Got it. The horse goes in front. Okay.
So then it was a podcast where we were interviewing people who did what they loved. And my angle more so was from like interviewing people from Wyoming who did what they loved and were successful. That was my like initial want for it, because I mean, I went to a swim camp at UT and everyone was like, ride a horse to school. And I'm like, I am just a human. Like, I am just as able to accomplish things, to do things, like, just because I'm from Wyoming and it's inland and behind the times, like, doesn't mean I'm just, like, inept, you know? So
another thing about the podcast, I was working two, like, part-time jobs at the time. I was a graphic designer, more like magazine creator for the Wyoming Education Association, which is, like, I don't know if it was a government job, but like you're in kind of the school district. And I was wearing slacks and a button up and a tie every day. Worked at the bookstore at our university. I was the marketing coordinator. I got fired from WEA because I just like did nothing. I just was not a hard worker. I was just sitting on my computer all day. And then I was pretty much going to get fired from the bookstore as well. So I was like, yeah, I'm putting in my 2 weeks. Like I can't get fired twice. So I was done with both of those jobs to pursue this fucking podcast full time. Like horrible decision. You know, we've seen people we know doing making decisions like this now. We're like, don't do it. And then I'm like, we did it. And then I had to get a job. So I went and worked at Domino's. This is after college.
Delivery.
Yep. Nice. I was delivering and then
standing.
Yep. And then I quit Domino's and worked for a moving company. And we literally were like, one of the first jobs was to go to the dorms at UW and move out all the old dorm shit so they could move all the new stuff in. And I mean, it's, you know, 12, 15 floors. Like there's elevators, of course, but that was hard work. And then after that was when I started working at the DMV.
The plush job.
Yes, exactly. At the time, I was like, let's go. Like, this is what I need right now. So the podcast, you know, like she said,
a couple episodes, like probably 6 or 7.
Yeah. And like she said, we were really trying to interview people that did what they love to see if there was like a commonality between all of them, you know. And I think we were selfishly trying to figure out, like, what can we learn from these people to get more in their position? Because it was a couple business owners, you know, a wrestler, like just a couple different people that were very successful. Made like $12 in advertisements from the podcast, which was a lot at the time because it was like less than a dollar with the blog. Yeah. But then, you know, the podcast kind of fizzled out. We got,
again, it just big felt jobs. Yeah. It just like did not flow naturally. Yeah,
we weren't like super passionate about it. And then after that was van life.
Mm-hmm. Van life. I like this phase.
Yes. Wow. So March 2020, pandemic is dropping like that. That was kind of when everything, at least for us, started closing. And we were like, let's buy a van. So we were literally got on Auto Trader, whatever.
Watched a couple on YouTube.
Yeah.
For like over, you had watched them over a year. Mm-hmm. And then I had started watching them within the last like 6 or so months.
Yeah. Shout out Aiden and Beck. We've probably seen every one of your videos like 4 times, especially the van build ones.
Yes. Yeah.
So we ordered this van sight unseen, bought it for $13,000, had it delivered from Chicago all the way out to Laramie.
We used our wedding money for that.
Yeah.
Because
you got married like in May?
June 2020. So that year. Okay. So this is like 3 months prior to that.
Yeah.
I really hope you tell about the honeymoon.
Yes, we will definitely mention that.
We had this money for our wedding. We were really fortunate to have both of his parents, my mom, helping us pay for it. And when we're like, well, we can't really have a wedding, so maybe instead of like a big wedding and a honeymoon, let's get a van mm-hmm. and just have people like contribute to that as well, like a gift.
And this was like when everything was changing with COVID. So originally we had a list of like 200 people, and then the governor came out and said you can only have events of 10 people or less. And then we were like, okay. And then eventually it ended up on like 50 or something. Yeah,
so we were able to just do our wedding party.
Yeah.
And like immediate family.
Very immediate family.
Yeah. So then we kind of got the itch again. We're like, what do we create? What do we do here?
So with van life though, we like were converting this entire van. So we bought Mercedes Sprinter van completely blank. We like, it was pretty gross and filthy when we got it. So I have very vivid memories of Kinsey like on the ground scrubbing all of the stuck on stuff and
dead bugs in the headliner.
Yeah. And we, yeah, you know, put the subfloor in and the insulation and the laminate flooring. And
you learned all that on YouTube. You went all bought tools that day.
Yeah. So literally the day, it was like, I think the day after we got the van, or maybe even the day of, we had to go to Walmart to buy a drill and a freaking hammer and all of this stuff, you know? And like, here we are, we're like, what's this one do? And it's like a saw that we're like, oh God, you know? So
I saw the work you did. I'm super impressed that you learned that off of YouTube and some tools at Walmart.
Thank you. Yeah. So we like, it got to looking really good. We just never finished the kind of kitchen area, the plumbing and the electrical. And so we, so then the honeymoon, we obviously were like, you know, we're just going to get a van and not do a honeymoon anymore. So we got married on a Saturday, and the following Monday, this is when I was working at the DMV, we had to go to Rawlins, Wyoming, which if you're listening to this and you know where Rawlins, Wyoming is, you'll have a special appreciation for why this was so fucking miserable.
Maybe Google it.
Yeah. But we go over to Rawlins because I have to work 2 days there to fill in for somebody at their DMV. And
just got married. I could have stayed home, but I was like, we just got married. Like, I want to be with my husband.
And in hindsight, you should have.
I should have just missed you extra.
Because then I just would have gotten a hotel too. Everyone would have been more comfortable. But yeah. Kinsey and the two dogs, Harper and Cooper, came in the van with me, and this is dead of the summer, and like Rawlins is just an absolute wasteland, so it was like 95 desert all day, and
no, not really like much air conditioning in the van, I mean in the two front seats, but
yeah. And you heard us say like we didn't get to the electrical, so yeah, definitely no air conditioning. We slept in the Walmart parking lot. Kinsey would drop me off, like we were going in there to go to the bathroom and stuff, she would drop me off at work. And then she would just take the dogs to a park all day and just be
like just, 8 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. 8 hours.
8 hours and 95 degrees with dogs.
Yep. Yes.
Happy honeymoon, honey.
Yeah. So, I mean, we had like, she had to find a shaded area, and like, she'd come pick me up for lunch and we'd sit in the car and eat sandwiches. And it was tough.
And we didn't have a lot of money, but there was a really like a donut chain that I had grown up eating. So one morning I was like, okay, he's working there with this other lady who's like been really nice to him, and she's local to the area, so like she's been really kind helping him get, so I was like, I'm gonna go get donuts.
I don't remember this.
And so I like put my donut up in the like, it's, I don't know, in a van there's like a headliner, yeah,
like above then, like, the visor,
yeah, like a little stash spot up there, and I took them in two donuts and I think like chocolate milk or something, just to like be kind.
Yeah.
And I came back and Cooper ate my donut.
Cooper.
I know. And I was just like, I'm miserable.
That was a really tough couple of
days. The bed in the van was not comfortable at all.
No, we made the mistake of buying like extra firm foam. So it was like so hard.
No.
It was just not comfortable. And
no.
It was the small, basically one of the smallest Mercedes vans that you can buy. So it was cramped and the two dogs. And
so we said, how do we take lemons and make lemonade? what do we do here? And we did have a decent following. I mean, like, I had four or five people messaging me like, when's the next van update? So yeah. Like,
it was like friends.
Yeah. Yeah. But they were like, I'm invested. Like, I want to see what's happening here. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, what do we do here? Like, we're not immediately overnight going viral for converting a van. Yeah. What? Why not? Just kidding. But so then we started an account called Van Dogs of Instagram. So basically this was a completely new model for us where other people were submitting the content and we would just get their permission. Like, well, I mean, by them submitting it, that was their permission.
Yeah. But- and like we, like in the beginning, we would reach out and DM people and be like, hey, we've started this account. Like, we'd love to feature some of your posts on our page. We obviously weren't giving them anything in return for it.
Yeah.
So
I definitely sent a few things into Frenchies of Instagram over the years.
Really?
That's- she got featured one time.
Really? That's what we were trying to build.
Yeah, like, pretty exactly. Much exactly that. Just one of those accounts. And so that got pretty good. I don't remember what the following,
like 1700, but I mean at the time we had built that in maybe 6 months, and I don't know if you see my personal Instagram, I have like 300 followers on there, so like we had never built up any sort of following. And then from there we were like, okay, maybe we try to sell some merch. So we tried to sell like some stuff with our logo on it, some stuff with like Van sayings on it, and oh, we actually I think had a really cool business model, but I don't know how sustainable it is. Instead of just doing like kind of fast fashion, we were going and thrifting clothes and like pressing, you know, stuff
cool.
onto them and then reselling them.
Yeah.
So trying to just kind of do, you know, a bit of a regenerative spin on it.
We had like 3 friends order it, and then everything else came from his mom. She would like put in an order each yeah. week.
And yeah. like we had, I remember we had friends up in Cody that we said, will you guys just like put on some of these clothes and we can go in the backyard and like photograph you in them? So we just got some lifestyle photos, and yeah. I think we ended up making like $120 total from like shirts and stickers and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so then I don't remember exactly when it was, but we were traveling in the van going somewhere. It might have been like Salt Lake or something. But that's when we had the idea for the pet tags. No, it was the mirror hangs first.
Yeah.
So we were literally like, okay, what could we do? Like, what could we maybe make as like an actual product that's not just like buying clothes and like printing some stuff on there? And so we were like, what about, you know, resin mirror hangs for cars where you could like slip in a photograph. And that was kind of like, you know, spin it as like, hey, you're in van life, you have a dog, here's this for your mirror, put your dog's photo in it.
And like resin sitting in the sun, like emitting toxins.
And like, we were like, okay, I'm pretty sure it's illegal in some states to have anything hanging from your mirror. So we're like, we need to rethink that. And that's when we came up with the idea for pet tags.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when a lot changed.
Yeah. So then this was kind of the first, like, this was the first thing that actually worked that we did.
Yeah.
You go ahead.
So we started actually making the tags in like October, November of 2020.
Yeah, it was after
COVID. And, you know, for those listening, you have your 2 parts of resin, you mix them together, you pour your color in, you pour it into the mold, you let it cure for 24 hours, you add in all your cute charms, you put a layer of resin over it, you put their name, you flip it over, you put their phone number, you resin over all of that.
But hold on, how did you do the name and phone number?
Oh, yeah.
It was like really...
Oh, God. So the names actually were better because of the size. So like the issue with the phone numbers came down to the size where like... You know, you're trying to do 7 digits on the back, and we're giving them 2 to 4 lines of text that they could do.
Oh, yeah.
And so you cut out the vinyl on the Cricut, you know, and what you usually do is stick a piece of transfer tape on it, peel it all up, and then set it on the tag, and then peel the tape up, and it should stay. But it was too small, so it wasn't enough sticky area. So instead, I mean, these numbers, we're talking like half an inch tall, these phone numbers. Not and I just
even,
remember
like, minuscule.
Yeah.
Inch,
so honestly. I mean, think about a pet tag, like
yeah, these
really this big
1.75 by like 3/4 inches.
He remembers the measurements for having to change it so much.
Sounds dramatic.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
So literally the phone numbers, we were taking the weeder tool, the tweezers, and you pick one number on, put it, and one number on, put it. And you're doing this potentially 28 times on one tag if they have 4 phone numbers.
When we had 2 orders a week, it was like nothing.
Right.
It was kind of like soothing. It's like, oh.
Yeah, let's get a couple orders to get done.
Yeah, this is cute.
So then you started doing this, and I've seen pictures. They were all custom. Everybody had different colors.
I think the number one.
Crazy themes.
And we literally were not giving them these options. We were just like saying, here's a pet tag and a custom text box. Tell us what you want.
Right.
Like, full customization. They would be like, my dog's name is Jojo, make whatever you think. Or like, do you remember any of like the craziest requests that we would get? Someone would be like, we can't fucking do this.
I don't remember a lot of the crazy ones, but like one was their dog's name was River, so we went and bought like little fish tank rocks, and then instead of like adding a ton of mica powder in to make it like solid color. We had just a little bit of blue mica, so it was like opaque, like a river. Like that one was really cool.
It's literally like people could put in custom orders and then we would go out and buy stuff to fulfill that individual order.
But we have to back up. Before it got there, we had very like few colors and add-in options. This was before anything happened. So it was really easy.
Tell me about the video that went viral.
Okay.
And why did you make this video in the first place?
Yeah. So like I said, this was November, I think we really started posting videos on TikTok about our tags. Cause I had just gotten onto TikTok at the time. I was very resistant to it in the beginning.
Yeah. I'd been on for like a month and I was like, this is so fun.
And there were a couple people that we'd seen that were like, oh, you know, my video blew up. I created a business. We're like, cool, we'll try it. Like we're in content creation, obviously. And so we were making a few videos here and there. And then December 22nd, I'm leaving work, going out to the parking lot. And I remember, so I got to back up a little bit. With our tags, we quickly started getting reviews that they were breaking off of the collars from people. And so we were like,
the hang hole.
Yeah, exactly. And so we were like, okay, we got to do something to kind of reinforce these. So like I said, when you pour the resin in, there's like a post where the resin goes around to create that key ring. And so we would take a metal jump ring, sorry to get graphic here, and put it on the post basically to reinforce it. So we would put this metal ring in to reinforce it, and that didn't like solve the issue completely, but it helped a lot. So
in hindsight, I think it really should have been like a U, like, you know what I mean? Like
it should have been a metal tag to begin with, honestly. It shouldn't have ever been resin, I think, if we're being totally honest. So we were trying to film kind of all the different parts of what we do. And so I remembered, I was like, oh, I have this footage of us putting the jump ring in there and then pouring the resin in. I could just make a little video and talk about it. So I
people had asked too. They're like, what's that?
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
I didn't realize. Oh yeah. Cause I replied to a comment, yep. Didn't I? Mm-hmm. So I'm in the parking lot and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna put these couple clips together, do a little voiceover. That's like, the reason we put the metal jump ring in the tag is.
No, you go the loop.
I don't hear that.
So like the loop.
And so, yeah, we were like, we put the metal ring in for this, that, and the other reason to kind of reinforce it. And so I hit send, posted the video, drove home. It's like a 6-minute drive, like super small town. And by the time I got home, it had like 25,000 views. And that had been our most viewed video of all time up until that point. So I was like, okay, this is a little weird. And I told Kinsey. So then for the next 4 or 5 hours after we got home, we had a little trundle bed on our couch that pulled out. And we were sitting there just refreshing and refreshing. And it'd be 30,000 and 50,000 and 100,000 and 200. And so then that was on a Tuesday. By the following Monday, the video got 7 million views. We did $10,000 in sales. And mind you, these tags were $10 a piece. So we did 1,000 tags, say 1,000 sale orders. And like I said, made $10,000 that week. And that following Monday, we put in our notice at work to quit our jobs.
How much time does it take one person to make one tag?
At least 24. I mean, more than 24 hours because the resin has to cure.
But like how much actual like working time?
Probably like.
So you're probably like a half hour to pour the tag, cures for 24 hours. After that, you come back in and you put on, so you know, the toppers, the names, the.
Two different types of resin. We were using two part for the initial base.
Which has to cure with just time.
With 24, at least 24 hours. You could kind of get away, but it was bendy. It was just best to do 24 hours. And then we had UV resin. So like the nail lights, we probably bought over the span of the time we did tags. Probably 20 of those, like
the nail lights we ordered from Amazon. Yeah. That was our UV light. And I remember our counter, it'd have, you know, we had like a power.
I did notice those.
In power strip.
Yeah.
Multiple lights. And you'd put them under and they would just off gas. Like it was horrible.
Yeah.
If you made too big of a batch, and I don't know what the threshold was.
Yeah.
But it would rapidly harden, get really hot and be smoking. Like in a matter of seconds. You know what I mean? And so like, we'd be sitting there, we had just mixed this resin and we're like pouring a few tags and then we're like, is that starting to harden? And we would feel it and it'd be burning hot. And this is like room temperature resin from this chemical reaction that was happening.
Yeah.
If you do too much.
And resin, did you feel concerned about like your...
Yeah.
Yes. All the time.
All the time.
And the same for our dogs. But like we were under the like kitchen vent hood.
We would have that on.
So
all and the time.
We'd have to leave it on overnight while everything cured.
Yeah.
So like we were trying to do the proper ventilation, but it probably was not good enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me how you scaled this operation up to meet the demand.
Yes. So.
Well, first of all, we didn't.
Long story. So to begin with, so I told you we were doing it in our basement apartment, and to begin with, it was just like having my mom come over. So she was living 45 minutes over the hill from us, and she would come over in the basement, and this poor woman, she's like, she's not old, but like she's older. She has to wear reading glasses. So she's like these tiny, tiny numbers she's trying to like pull off and put on this tag and just miserable. And then we ended up hiring our upstairs neighbor as our first like official employee, because you know moms, they're like, I'll help you, I'm not gonna take any pay, you know.
Yeah, so she would come like 2 days a week for like 4-ish hours each.
Yeah,
and most of the time it was just spent like training,
yeah,
like teaching our process.
And we just could not get caught up, like just getting so behind on orders. Our lead time was already like 2 to 4 weeks, and we were having to reach out and change it to like 4 to 6 weeks and all this stuff. And like for custom products, you kind of expect that, but it started becoming 6 to 8 weeks, and there were too many people for us to email. And, yeah, exactly. Some of them never got their tags, or she issued a lot of refunds.
Lots of refunds.
But from there, there was a retail space that opened up across the street from our house. And so we were like, okay, we at least, we got to move into here to like just have a warehouse to like produce more of this stuff.
Well, we like looked into it, and then we were like, no, we can't do that.
Because it was a 3-year commitment. It was
$1,000 a month.
It was $1,200 a month, which was the rent we were paying for our own place at the time. So it was
then
like,
there was a point where we were like, do we move in across the street? Like,
do we try to live there?
It's like just a retail. It's not a like, not of a shower, like no kitchen or anything. So we were like, no, we can't do that. And then we were like, no, we're not going to do this. And then like a month had passed and still it was open. So we were like, it's a sign. We have to do it. We have to do it. So we did it. And then we also hired one more person. So at this point we had 2 employees.
Was that our first full-time person?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And so then still weren't meeting demands.
Yeah. So we just kept hiring. We were just like, we're not meeting demand. We need more people. We didn't really think about the systems and stuff. And I mean, to give you an idea of how custom we got, we had people hand painting designs onto tags. Like we had hired artists to come and hand paint tags rather than just doing the vinyl or just doing like the little charms and stuff. So like, remind me to show you some of these photos, because some of the tags that is like Sarah Jean
painted and Emma
were unbelievably beautiful.
Yeah.
Way too much work went into them.
Yeah.
You guys are so kind. In my like self-production days, I was very streamlined. Like, this is what we do. No modifications. Like,
we kind of thought the custom thing was like our shtick. Like that was the reason it sold. So we like,
I mean, imagine
really had to lean into that.
We really wanted to be fair. Like, this is kind of when we were waking up to privilege, and
this was the George Floyd murder.
Yeah, and so just a lot of like shitty things about working. Like we had worked jobs where we weren't paid a lot and just were miserable, so we're like, no, we're gonna do this right. So I mean, minimum wage in Wyoming at the time, I think it still is, not sure, was like $7.25. Yep. We were like, we're starting everyone at 15. Like we wanted to make it a place where like it was fun to come to work and like you're valued and you're getting paid well. So we weren't bringing in as much money. Sales were slowing down because we weren't able to put enough out,
and we were relying on a viral video. Like viral videos were what was driving the business at the time. So like, you want to get sales, you need a video that goes viral. We weren't really selling locally at the time.
So then we watched Schitt's Creek.
Love that.
Yeah. You like Schitt's Creek?
Love it.
Amazing show. It's like we literally watch it when we go to bed sometimes. It's our comfort show.
Yeah.
It's a comfort show when I travel too.
It's amazing.
Except
when David opens his store.
Oh yeah.
I saw it and was like, I have to have this. Like,
oh my. So that was our first pivot was
Apothecary?
Yes.
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 So, like, you know how a lot of the stuff was kind of like black and white,
yeah,
and neutral colors.
So
literally the first product we brought in as a wholesale product was a pet candle that could have easily fit inside that store.
Dog safe. It's like requirement.
Well, that wasn't necessarily the requirement, but that was the inspiration for sure. And I was like, I want to do wholesale products. I want to have a business. I want to have a retail shop. I want to have something where people can walk in the door and actually shop there.
Yeah. So that was a good chunk of money and a lot of time that a lot of us were pulled away to create, because we had to paint inside. We had to, I mean, set it up.
We had to design those like custom, did we show you like the custom tag door of like how to design a tag and like how to go through the whole process. So all these different marketing materials.
So that was one of our first, like, not desperation, but like desperation to bring in more business.
The soft opening before our grand opening, the only two products we had were candles and pet tags.
And just so much love to everybody.
And balm. And our balm that we made.
What about the snuffle mats?
Those were like the last thing we ever did.
Okay.
We have the physical store now, and then we sign up for farmers markets. And then we're like, okay, well, we have a store. We need to bring in more wholesale products. So we got on Fair, which is like Amazon for retailers. And we ordered a bunch of product, and we were literally living like deposit to deposit. Like, we had no idea how to build retail. We had no idea how to like manage inventory.
How much to buy? How much you think you're going to sell? I mean,
and we would do like the farmers markets were great. Those were our saving grace all summer.
We knew every Friday we were going to probably make at least $1,000. So that could keep us somewhat afloat.
Great. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, as the fall started to come, we were like,
because the farmers market ends in like September. Like, they don't have anything indoor, and after that the weather's so horrible.
Yeah,
can't do anything like that.
So you would sell like 100 tags for farmers market?
Well, we were selling, like, the farmers market is when we started to get into more wholesale stuff. So at that time, I think we had the tags, we had lick mats,
oh, the farmhound treats.
Yeah.
Okay.
We had like poochie butter, like dog safe peanut butter. Yeah, that was most of it.
Water bottle.
Yeah, just some like different kind of gear and enrichment and stuff. And so we were selling mostly that at the farmer's market, but like we were selling it wholesale. So you're not making the best margins on it already. And so we weren't selling it wholesale, but like we were buying it wholesale and reselling it. So it wasn't like our own product.
Yeah. Money was getting slower and slower and slower. And we were starting to freak out. And we hadn't been in business for a year, so we couldn't qualify for any traditional business loans.
We had like 10 employees by the end of it, I think.
Yeah, because we were just
full-time
trying to keep up with the demands. And still, like, I remember we would go and charge our car and just answer emails for an hour. And it, like,
50 to 100 emails a day.
Was
people
just
mad about orders not showing up and
degrading on our mental health. Like, yeah, that was
Google reviews coming. I mean, I don't think we got above a 3-star because of like how behind we got. And like, I think a lot of it, we kind of became paralyzed because there were so many emails to answer. There were so many orders unfulfilled. We were like,
it just got too big.
We can't do this. And then we ran out of money.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we like we took out some of these like loans with Shopify where they'll give you like $10,000 and then they just take a percentage of your income or your orders, whatever. And that was great. And then we got a credit card because we were like, well, maybe we can just pay for all our own stuff on this credit card, like, and any money, like, we won't take as much from the business.
We applied with the credit card in hopes of getting a $20,000 limit. And they were like, no, we'll give you $5,000. And then we got the credit card and it said $20,000, which was bad. We're still paying that credit card down today.
Yeah.
So
you're still paying it off.
Use that credit card.
And then there was this company out of Montana that specifically worked with businesses like ours that had kind of a crazy beginning and not the full year, needed help. And we took the call and they were like, this was October of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like talking to us, and then they were like, oh, you have these predatory loans from Shopify. We, as of 4 months ago, don't work with anyone that has these
brand new bylaws or whatever.
Yeah. And we were like, right, that's it. And
it was that, like, that moment we were sitting, so funny enough, we were sitting on the same trundle where we were sitting when the video went viral on our couch. And that didn't go through, and we looked at each other and we said, we have to let everyone go.
Yeah.
In that moment.
So hard.
I wish we would have done it in person or at least on the phone, but like, we literally did not have another second to spare for anyone to like
people were going to come in that day.
Yeah. And so
handle the payroll.
No. Yeah. And so we sent texts. We sent like an individual text to each person and
just a long ass text giving them kind of the lowdown on everything
and like
how sorry we were and
in such fight or flight. Like,
yeah.
It was a dark couple months after that. So
we couldn't even, this is so sad. We couldn't even sleep in the dark.
Oh,
like
it was tough. It was really tough. So then we let everyone go in October. And after that, we were just kind of wondering what to do. And so
we still had orders, though.
We still had orders. We still had tags. I mean, so what had kind of happened was Kinsey and I weren't doing a lot of the tag making ourselves when we had our entire team. So when we had to let everyone go, we were back in. Like, we were doing all the custom tags. I mean, this poor girl did so many fucking custom orders.
Right before we let everyone go, that's when we were like, well, okay, it costs a lot more to like go out and buy wholesale products. So let's make like bandanas. Let's make the snuffle mats.
And we had closed our retail shop because we didn't have employees anymore to be there during the day. And
So
just couldn't manage it.
Right at the tail end of everyone else was when the snuffle mat started. So, and God, his mother is a freaking saint.
We would send her with like raw material. Like we'd cut
everything.
And but like we just throw it all together because I mean you saw them. It was like you had to sew each one of those individual things. There was probably 20 or 30 different flaps on each snuffle mat. We would just send her with that, and a couple of days later she'd come back with completed snuffle mats. Like just sewing and sewing and sewing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And then we would try, I like would sew during the day too, in between like tags, and then we're still like getting orders out because we still had some wholesale products and trying to run like really big sales to get people to buy stuff. So we didn't
15 videos a day trying to get one to go viral.
So how did you move from that to where you are now?
So there was a moment when we had closed the retail store. We were doing the snuffle mats and stuff, but we were doing wholesale orders. And I remember Kinsey was, we had a giant box of snuffle mats that had been delivered, or not snuffle mats, but lick mats that had been delivered to us. And she was taking one out of the box and putting it in a different box with all of our packaging materials and then packaged up to be sent off. She goes, why are we doing this? Like, we're literally this middle person that doesn't need to exist. They're already shipping to customers. Like,
already making the content about this stuff.
Yeah. Like, we have to buy all these boxes. We have to buy all the labels. We have to go to USPS and ship them all. Like, why are we doing this? And so at the time, like I said, we'd had a couple viral videos throughout that kind of initial business. And so we had like 200,000 followers on TikTok, which is a good amount. But if anybody has ever done this, they know it's like, you can't live off that. Like, you get nothing from it unless you have videos going viral and then a product behind that. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this business thing is not sustainable. But I told Kinsey, I said, I think there's a small chance that if we just start creating content and get into some affiliate marketing, that we could make this work without having to do any of the business aspect of it.
We weren't comfortable in our own home. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't our own space, like very thin walls, you know, like just didn't feel like, I think every single human on this planet needs a space they can go where they feel safe and they can just completely relax, unload. Like,
and we have had so many experiences of living in houses, both together and apart, where like the only place in the house that you feel comfortable is your bedroom, kitchen, not the living room. And that is so isolating.
Yeah. And it's just like, you're not your best self, like when you have nowhere to go other than your car, where you like completely can just, you can cry, you can like whatever you need to do, like you can just be yourself. Like,
yeah. And we had the shop, like, which was kind of our own place because nobody's working there anymore.
So triggering.
Yeah. All the like seeing everything that had to be done. Like, there was just no space where we felt like we could, like when you said you walked into the cabin, you could just, we did not have that at all.
Yeah. So long story short, like very much operating out of fight or flight, very hard. And we're like, fuck it. Let's sell everything and live nomadically.
And sell everything to get out of there, but also sell everything because we're like, we need money.
Yeah.
Like, we have to sell all of our shit because we don't have any money.
Negative thousands of dollars in the bank account.
For like every 6 months.
Yeah. Every single deposit, we would pay our bills really quick. And then we were like, yeah, we got to get out of here. So we did a huge garage sale from the shop, like posted the night before. We had multiple Cricut machines, so much vinyl, like all the little polymer clay add-ins.
Yeah, all the tag supplies.
So the garage sale was fruitful. It was nice. People were like lined up outside before. That was really nice to just get everything gone.
It was hard from a pride standpoint, though, because people knew that that was a new business and coming in to see everything being sold and what's there. So that was
hard. That was hard. And then sold a lot of the stuff from our house. And then
we packed the car with the dogs and everything else that we owned that we could fit in there. And we drove to Needles, California.
Okay, so
we got to backtrack a little.
Yeah, so we're trying to wrap things up at the shop. We like making content. We have a decent following.
Was this after we had let everyone go?
Yes.
Okay.
It's
like January.
Across the street at home in the bath. And Bryce was over at the shop doing some orders.
At the computer, researching.
And he comes over, like barreling in, and he's like, I know where our content needs to go. We have to change everything. And he had just got done listening to a podcast that Dr. Karen Becker was on. And it was his introduction to the Forever Dog. Literally, like, the next week, we are buying raw food for them to transition the dogs. And talking about, like, how are we going to incorporate this into our content? Like, this, like, I've never seen him so, like, absolute knowing what needs to happen, what he wants to do, where he wants to go with this.
The thing that had kind of happened, we were feeding, you know, all the big kibble brands to begin with. And this is not to shame anyone feeding kibble, but I was listening to this podcast. And then I was like, I mean, if for those of you that don't know, Dr. Karen Becker and Ronnie Habib wrote this book, The Forever Dog. And it's all about kind of the unsavory stuff of the pet industry and like the history of our animals and like whether they're carnivores and omnivores and all the different inside stuff. And I was like, I was reading this and it was fucking blowing my mind. I was like, we've been lied to. And I mean, this was the kind of the time where you're early 20s and you're realizing everything you learned was kind of a lie, you know, as you grow up. And so I was like, everything that's happening in the human world is also happening in the pet world. Like our dogs are having these issues because of the food that they're on. And so I was like, we have to change this for our dogs, but we cannot keep this to ourselves. Like we have got to share this with people and we have got to share our journey into, you know, trying to improve the health of our animals.
So then we got into smoothie treats.
Oh yeah. Yep. The smoothie treats. So I think honestly, wow, I know exactly how the smoothie treats were born. Harper and Cooper wouldn't eat raw organ meat. And so I was like, and they still won't. They'll eat it frozen, but not defrosted raw, and they'll eat it dehydrated, which is, it's got to just be a texture thing.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
so literally we were trying to do the full DIY diet, going to the store, buying all the individual ingredients, trying to balance it at home. And shout out Kayla Kowalski, because we bought her guide to begin with on raw feeding. Mm-hmm. And so I literally make this incredible meal. I'm taking all this time to put all the different components together and the organ meat and the raw meat, and I give it to them and they eat some of it and not a lot of it. And I'm like, come on, gotta be fucking kidding me. Which, like, it's not their fault. They all have preferences. Like, this is a me thing very much.
Mm-hmm. But and so, you wonder, like, it's weird that they both didn't eat it. Like, are they talking to each other?
No, I think it's because they were on kibble. And the they whole were part older. Of their early life. And I think because they were so picky. Like, I
they were older?
So they're like, there are older dogs. Like, Banks was pretty much still a puppy. I think he was under a year.
Yeah, he was. Because so we got him able like, that year.
So they're not older. They're just your older.
Yeah. Just so they're at just the time, they're like
3 and 4.
Yeah. 3 and 4. But they had been eating kibble their whole lives. And I very much believe, kind of regardless of what you feed, if you only feed one type of thing their entire life, they're going to be picky to other stuff. I mean, you have kids, you know. You feed them a diverse diet as kids, they'll probably eat a more diverse diet later on.
If you feed them the wrong blueberry, they're not even kidding. I have a That's kid great. That only eats blueberries in the spring when they're like, you know, firm and tart.
Yeah.
The rest of the year, she won't eat
that. That's so funny. I love that. It wouldn't eat the organ meat, especially, and then some of the veggies and stuff. And I was like, okay, what if I like blend this up and like pour it over their food? Because actually, we were still transitioning them off of kibble. So it was like half of it was kibble, half of it was the new raw food. And so I would take the organ meat and some of the veggies and stuff, and I would blend it together and pour that over all of the food. And they loved it. They ate it no problem. And I was like, okay. Here's something. And so then from there, I was like, oh, we could do this with all the stuff that they won't eat, you know, like Brussels sprouts and like all the good veggies and everything. And so that's where I think the smoothie treats was born. From there, we started sharing about it. And
just our recipes that we would do. And yep. like, this was how our picky eaters, we got them to eat them.
Yep. And then like, you know, like we were sharing some quotes from the Forever Dog that with like voiceover or sharing the quote as a voiceover over a video of us like putting together a bowl of food. And then one of those went really, really viral. I think like, again, like 7 million views or something. And I was like, yeah, I'll show you that one. But that one, that was the first video where I was like, okay, people are wanting this content. Like people really want to see this kind of new wave of pet parenting. April 2022, we left Laramie, moved out to Needles, California for a month. We just had our car and then the two dogs. And I remember going to the river every morning to go run around with them. And it was a tough month, but we were starting to get in touch with a few different brands about potentially working together. I think we probably had, you know, 300,000 or 400,000 followers on TikTok, but we realized with some of these brands that we started working with that their payment was net 60, which for those of you that are listening that you might not know, that means you do something for them and then 60 days later, they pay you for it. It's not like a you work this week, you get paid at the end of the week kind of thing. And
like,
so
like a 7 to 14.
Yeah. Or a 2 day turnaround, you know,
just a do now.
I'm gonna pay it up front and then I'll do it. Yeah. So this was like probably 10 days before the end of the month where we knew some deposits were going to come in and we had made enough money to get the next Airbnb wherever we were going to go. But we looked and we're like that deposit, this was end of April, but like that deposit's not coming in until fucking June or July. And so we were like, oh my God, we're running out of money again. We literally cannot afford to rent another Airbnb. And we only have one option.
And that was to go to Cody.
And move in with mama.
And move in with my mom.
So we're back. But we took a little break because we got hungry and we had appointments.
We were kind of wrapping up the journey that got you guys to where you are now. And I just wanted to say, I love your story so much because it has so many of the ups and downs of like a true small business. And I can resonate with that so much because I had many of my ups and downs and, you know, my manufacturing on my own and the stress of like, oh my God, am I ever going to get this done? And the, you know, Kenzie, I remember the picture of you at 7 a.m. flipping dog burgers. Like I so had those moments, like at football games too, like trying to get people to come by my green stuff in a little basement kitchen. So
we call it in the trenches.
Totally. Yeah. Yes. So I just love hearing about that story and where you guys are now. Can you tell me about where the passion for pets kind of came from and how you got into this more natural segment of the industry?
Yeah. So, I mean, we obviously told the story of me busting through the door while Kenzie was in the bathtub and completely, you know, changing everything that we were doing. But I think the real root of this is the crippling fear of losing our animals and especially losing them to something that we could have prevented or we could have done, you know, to increase their longevity.
Yeah, I had a dog that turned into my mom's dog and she had to put him down because he got a really aggressive form of mouth cancer at like 6 years old. And so we went to be with my mom so she wasn't alone for that. And just seeing this dog's quality of life just rapidly decline in like 6 months. And there's so many things now. My mom obviously consumes our content and there's always that in the back of our minds, like what if this could have been different, or what if we would have been able to help, or all the amazing connections we're making now with these business owners that are also so passionate about the health and well-being of pets, you know. So that's another big driving force, I think, is in seeing my mom's pain through that process, you know. Yeah. I don't want to see people go through that. And obviously the death of pets is inevitable, but if we can help extend that timeline and while maintaining a good quality of life, I think that's the biggest thing that we're focusing on here.
Yeah, totally. And you know, one thing that I've started learning about is what they call ignorance debt. And this is not to really call any of us ignorant, but it's essentially saying like, when we start something, you're spending a lot of time trying to learn what you don't know. And like, there are like some shortcuts, but there are ways to kind of progress along that timeline faster of, let's say, caring for a pet or starting a business or anything. And so I think that's really what we want to do is like, we want to empower pet parents and accelerate their learning when it comes to caring for their animals so that they don't have to wait until, you know, one passes to be like, well, shit, like now I need to make these changes. We want to be able to help them say, you know, where are we right now and what manageable changes can we make? But like, I was literally getting a sick gut feeling just thinking about that day that we put Boo and Bay down. And just, I mean, we know pet parents are always going to go through that, but let's have them go through that when their dogs are 15, 20 years old, you know, not six. Like,
yeah, it's probably not from cancer.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, like Dr. Billinghurst talks about it all the time. He says that, you know, cancer doesn't exist in the wild like it exists in our domesticated animals. And I think to me, that just screams the fact that we're doing something, not we, but we as a collective human race are doing something to put more disease into these animals. And you know, I think we've taken upon ourselves to find out exactly what that is.
One of the things that really hit me when I was getting into this was I had my dog walking business and I had like majority golden retrievers. And I read something that said that, you know, back in the day, golden retrievers went to sleep under a tree when they were 20. And now they get cancer when they're 8. You know, not all, but like on average. And that's, and I've seen a lot of them do that. And it's just devastating.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
And I just, I don't know. I think that, you know, we're not saying anything that we do cures cancer or this and that, but like there are definitely steps that we can take to increase the longevity and the chance that our dogs have of living long, happy lives. And I think that, you know, anything that we can do to help pet parents realize what that is, like that's what we're going for here.
You guys have your podcast, obviously. You have an amazing social media following. You have your guides on Kibble. And what is the other one?
Homemade Feeding.
Homemade Feeding. So what is next for you guys to help spread this mission?
I think YouTube is our closest next tangible step.
I kind of see YouTube as like an in-between of our short-form content and the podcast. So short-form content is, you know, just the facts. It's like you have such little time, you got to just pack the information in there. A podcast like this gives us the chance to go deeper into topics and explore a lot of different questions about things. And I think the YouTube will be in the middle. It's like not going to be as long form as the podcast is, but it's going to allow us to take a topic like one of the recent videos we filmed was why vets recommend kibble. And it allows us to take that and rather than just saying like, you know, three reasons why they recommend it, it allows us to give 10 reasons and it allows us to dig deep into what they're learning in vet school and what's leading to this and why the current state of the pet industry is what it is. So I'm very excited for YouTube because I think that for that pet parent that wants that next step beyond our short form content, that's exactly what it'll be. But I think we'll continue with the guides. You know, we love putting out the guides and I think they're very helpful. Mm-hmm.
And we just released a book. Tell me about the book. I got a sneak peek, but
yeah, so that'll come out on December 5th. It's available for pre-order right now. Obviously, I don't know when this podcast is going out, but what we did with the book was we really just tried to take what we share with our short form content and put that into something tangible. Because what I started to notice was I would go to our own profile and I'm like, okay, I'm trying to imagine myself as a pet parent who's just beginning this. They've never found our page. They've never thought about anything beyond kibble with their dog.
A lot of this information is a little startling.
Exactly.
People that have never heard it. You know?
So like,
we hear this every single day.
Yeah. So like somebody comes to our page and I think we share a lot of great content, but it's not in any order. It's like totally random. They're going to be lucky if they're going to get an answer to their specific question because we might have answered that 3 months ago and we're doing a video every day, you know? So what we really tried to do with the book was take this content, organize it into something that says, okay, you're starting out. You want to improve kibble? Here's your section. You want to feed a homemade diet? Here's your section. Here's our reasoning as to why we think you should move towards a more fresh diet and a less highly processed diet. If you want to start incorporating mental enrichment, if you want to remove toxins from your home, like we really just wanted to try and create a book that met every pet parent where they were at, regardless of their budget or economic status or whatever. And, you know, I think that we really did that. And I'm, you know, very proud of this book. We spent a lot of long days writing this. So I'm really excited for it to come out.
I was so impressed that you guys did it yourselves.
Thank you.
It's amazing.
Thank you.
My last question for you is, what message do you want to leave pet parents with? If you could connect with them one-on-one and give them one message about yourselves or the industry or anything, what's your message?
I think for me, it is a quote from Brené Brown, and it is, I'm not here to be right, I'm here to get it right. So
Oh, it is like change. We have not stopped thinking about it or using it since we found it.
It's part of core value, one of at least.
Yeah. So I don't care if new information has come out. I don't like, I'm not afraid. We're not afraid to come up and say, hey, what we learned here, there's new information, or just maybe like we were wrong about that, because nothing is more important to us than the health and the wellness of pets and the trust of the pet parents that are coming to us. So,
and that includes our pride. Like, we have to put our pride aside and be able to say, you know, if we're really gonna bring the truth to pet parents, we're not always gonna be right. And there's a level of having to accept that. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it would be just empowering pet parents. Like, I would want pet parents to know that not only are they doing good enough, regardless of where you're at, because we're all doing the best that we can with the information that we have, but like, you can do any of this. You know, you can feed your dog a homemade diet. You can help your dog get through a bout of diarrhea, or if they get a cut that maybe doesn't require stitches. Like, I really want to empower pet parents to be able to take their pet's health into their own hands, so that we don't have to rely on these big corporations that are, you know, trying to control everything. We don't have to rely on them every single step of the way, whether it's the vet offices or the food or the diagnostics labs. Like, we want to empower them to start kind of doing their own thing and, you know, using the vet when they really need them.
Yeah, I think that's something I've definitely learned, is like how to pick and pull what I need for my dog where.
Yes.
Sometimes you definitely do need the vet.
Right.
Sometimes you have that power to put something in the bowl that's going to make a difference.
Exactly. You know, you think about like one of the most common things I think people go in for is diarrhea. And it's like, if we can say, hey, rather than going to your vet, spending $50 to $150 or maybe even more.
Your time.
Yeah. For them to say, oh, you know, try this supplement. Like, we can say, hey, if you have diarrhea, skip the vet, try this supplement. If it doesn't work, then maybe it's time to go see the vet. But like, let's try some things first.
Some parameters too. Like, if there's blood, go see your vet.
Yeah.
Like, go see your vet. Absolutely.
Because I think that's one of the hardest decisions. I mean, I'm sure you've gone through it. It's like, okay, do I need to go to the vet right now? You know, exactly. And like, that's a really crippling fear, you know, even for us. And so I think if we can provide information that gives pet parents a bit more confidence, I think even if we can do that for one person, we will have succeeded.
For this episode, I'm Kelly.
I'm Kenzie.
And I'm Bryce. And we'll see you in the next one.